Carl Fisk had a lot of little boy in him right there.
Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Base Paths alongside Gabriel Cordoba Hawthorne, and I'm Josh Franz. We have a good episode planned out for you today. We'll find out what caught our eye all around the league, pick some ballers and followers, and talk a little bit about our hometown D-backs. So Gabe, let's start with you. What caught your eye in the American League this first couple weeks of the season?
Well, so far in these first couple weeks, it's really been, my eye's been on the AL East for the most part. We talked about it in the first show, how we weren't really sure how it was going to face out. We could easily see the top teams in that division kind of flip-flop with the bottom, and where possibly the Jays and the Orioles could finish up top, maybe even the Rays up there. But that hasn't been the case. The Red Sox have been holding steady out there, and the Jays are struggling mightily. The R.A. Dickey, their big pitching signing, has not looked great at all. He's gotten rocked in his last couple starts. He got killed against Boston, allowed three home runs to Will Middlebrooks, and he really looks like the older pitcher that I thought that last year was kind of a fluke, and he came into Toronto after that great year at the Mets, and people were expecting great things, but in the end, I thought this is just another knuckleball pitcher, another fad, and so far with an 8.44 ERA and 0-2 on the season, he is not panning out for that team, and their offense isn't carrying them like they thought it would. They're kind of looking like a team that's trying to find its identity and figure things out right now.
Right. It's such a small sample size, though. I wouldn't be too worried about R.A. Dickey. Excuse me. I don't think it was a fluke necessarily what he did last year, even though it was his first good dominant year in Major League Baseball. You just have to give knuckleball pitchers more time to adjust because the pitch, it's just different. It's really uncontrollable until you find it. So spring training might not have been long enough for him, and I would wait a few more starts, see how he's doing for everything to work out for him.
So let me pose this then. If it's something that it's tough to find and it takes a while to find, but when you find it, you got it. What if last year was the only year he found it? If you look at it, that was the best year he has ever had in the major leagues.
By far.
Going 20-6. His next best record is 11-9, and that's the only other time he's above .500.
Well,
starting games.
He had just learned the knuckleball. He came in as a conventional pitcher. That didn't work out. Went down to the minor leagues, learned the knuckleball. And then last year was really the first full season he was a starting pitcher with a knuckleball in the major leagues, and it worked out more than just fine for him winning the NL Cy Young. But I don't know. It's entirely possible that he's not going to find it this year. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, having a great year last year, that he's going to be able to figure it out within the next couple starts and have another good year.
Help lead the Jays, maybe?
Well,
you think
that
they can turn it around?
They're 2-5, which means they're 3 games out of first place. So, yeah, I think they have plenty of time to turn it around. They've got the bats. They've gotten off to a slow start. It happens. I mean, guys aren't always hot out of the gate, but they have the talent to turn it around. I don't think Boston has the talent to stay on top.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Especially Lackey getting hurt, but Clay Buchholz and John Lester aren't looking like a bad 1-2 for that pitching staff. But I think that offense does have some to be desired. Although Jacoby Ellsbury, we saw him 2 years ago compete for the MVP and arguably should have won it. I don't remember who beat him out that year, but I'm pretty sure that his numbers were comparable to that of Mike Trout's of last year.
Not quite, but on the same road, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Trout obviously had an absolutely unbelievable year, but Jacoby Ellsbury still had 50 steals, 30-plus homers, and batting well over .300. So if he can do that, we know what Pedroia is going to give him. And the Red Sox, I think they have stuff to figure out, but I don't think they're dead in the water, especially not as bad as what the Yankees are playing, that's for sure.
Well, the Yankees are 4-4. They're sitting in second place right now in the AL East. We said on our premiere show last week that we thought Boston and the Yankees, or at least I did, would finish 4th and 5th in the AL East. And I think when it comes down to it, they will find their way down there because everybody in this division has pitching.
Yep.
But Boston and the Yankees don't have the bats to be consistent for the whole year, whereas I think the other teams do. Baltimore's 3-4. Their biggest strength last year was winning one-run games. They're 0-3 this year in one-run games. So who knows if that was a fluke last year. They did win the division. They won the wild card with a minus in the run differential, which is extremely rare. So that's a cause for concern.
Yeah, except if you're a Baltimore fan, for sure. But they kind of their year kind of reminded me of what the D-backs did a couple years ago when the D-backs went to the playoffs themselves. They were winning a lot of these one-run games, and then we saw them the next year, last year. I looked like a fool and picked them to go to the World Series in both our TV show and on this podcast. And it came back to bite me. It just shows that it's tough to maintain winning all of these one-run games. It's multiple years in a row.
Right. There are so many things that can happen during the course of a game, during the course of a season, that just a bad ball bouncing one way
or absolutely.
A strikeout instead of a sack fly. There are so many things that it's hard to predict who's going to win one-run games. That's why you traditionally the Yankees – when they were great, they had home run hitters that would separate the game and make score 3-4 runs at a time, and you wouldn't have to worry about close games. Then you got Mariano Rivera, obviously,
exactly.
At the back
so
end.
I mean, if a one run lead going into the ninth, there's a good chance that the game's over anyways. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a tough formula to continue to be successful with, for sure.
Right. They have the ability to win one run games, but you don't want to count on it to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. But That brings us, transitioned us quite nicely to our segment called Ballers and Fallers. And my baller is from Baltimore. I got a guy by the name of Chris Davis out there who has started this season on fire, batting 417 with 4 homers and 17 RBIs. It has really been the power bat that team has needed. They have Adam Jones there, but he provides extra protection for him, which has allowed Adam Jones to get close to 20 RBIs this season, so allowing them to boost their offensive category, which they were struggling last year. And I think that if Chris Davis can keep it up for him, you know, he's going to be a great 4-hole hitter, 3-hole hitter that they definitely need in that lineup.
Yeah, it's a great start for them. If he's going to be successful the entire year, their lineup's got to go.
Yeah.
And there aren't too many pieces in that lineup that you could say, oh, this is an easy out. And right now, it's just going to be tough. I mean, Baltimore's got a good lineup. They got a good pitching staff. They're going to be tough to beat down the stretch. But go ahead with your faller.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, that takes me to my faller. A guy who got paid over $100 million in this offseason. I'm picking Josh Hamilton out with the Angels. He has not produced whatsoever, and I think it kind of carries over to what we saw from him at the end of last year with the Rangers. Yes, he started off very hot, but as we got to the end of the season, he just kind of fell apart, and they started actually booing him at home.
Wow.
even though they were still leading the division, had a chance to win it, and every time he came up to bat, they would boo him. He's hitting .154 this year with no home runs, and only 2 RBIs for a $100 million man who's supposed to be protecting Albert Pujols. I've seen games where they intentionally walk Albert Pujols with a man, like, with first base occupied.
Right.
And they walk Albert Pujols to get to Josh Hamilton. You cannot be having that from your 4-hole hitter. That is just absolutely ridiculous. Like, pretty much if you put in the lefty specialist against Josh Hamilton, you got an out, because he has no idea what he's doing up there against a lefty.
Right, and he's reaching out of the zone. There's plenty of reasons why he's not being successful right now. First of all, we know it's tough mentally to switch rosters, switch teams. Yep. We don't know how he's dealing with the off-the-field stuff. We know he's had problems with that in the past. I'm not going to attribute any of that to what's going on, but a change of scenery isn't easy, first of all, and then just switching teams. And then, yeah, he's chasing pitches out of the zone. He swings some more first pitches than anybody in the league. He's up to about 34% now, and that could be costing him because he just doesn't – he's not patient. He doesn't wait for his pitch. He has the ability to hit everything. We know that.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen consistently, and this is one of those times where – he's cold. He's one of the most hot and cold guys there are in the league, and right now it's just a cold stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about swinging at that first pitch, the pitchers know when you're swinging at first pitches. They absolutely know.
Of course.
So they just throw him that little slider that looks like it's starting in the zone and goes out, and he flails at it every time, and then he's down 0-1 immediately to start the at-bat.
When you're facing the best pitchers in baseball, you can't fight from behind. It's too difficult. They're too talented.
Yeah, you can't have 4 at-bats where you start down 0-1. You're just not going to get that many hits. It explains the .154 average. And then, you know, I don't know what's up with the pop, where the pop has gone. I would expect at least 1 home run. Maybe it's just he's not making contact.
Right, he's not hitting the ball well, so he's not going to hit it over the fence. But I think one of the main things also that's causing him trouble is the familiarity that the pitching staffs have with him.
Yeah.
Last year, the A's pitched phenomenally against him. He was worst against them in the league. He's going to face them this week in a 3-game series, so we don't know if he's going to turn it around there. But then he faced the Angels earlier in the week. His family's getting booed. His wife's getting hassled. Has to call the security. Yeah. It's hard for him to concentrate on baseball when that stuff's happening in the stands.
Yeah.
And the Angels obviously have the best scouting report on him out of anybody because he just got off their roster. They pitched him how the A's pitched him last year. Right. My mistake.
No worries.
Exactly. The Rangers pitched him how the A's pitched him last year.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't found success with that formula. He's got to study some tape, go and just mentally prepare and find out, watch some video and see what he's doing wrong against the A's and the Rangers.
You know, really, what I think they need to do is I think they need to drop him down in that lineup. I think maybe move Trumbo to four, do something, shift it around, because he is just – you can't have people walk Albert Pujols with a man on base with – like, that is just inexcusable.
If the problem was his confidence or he was nervous or he was struggling mentally, then I would say, yeah, move him down, take the pressure off of him, let him relax and go hit. But I think the problem right now is all physical. He's chasing pitches outside of the zone. He's just not being smart up there at the plate. He's flailing out. He's opening his hips. He can't hit the outside pitches. He's just got to study some tape and change physically. I don't think he's getting too pressured into anything. And if that was the case, then I would say move him down the order.
Yeah. One thing I think the Angels should do, maybe they'll do it come close to the All-Star break, but watch out for this. If the Angels get a decent, like a true leadoff hitter, watch out for them to be able to move Mike Trout more to that power role where he can utilize that pop. I know he hasn't had the greatest start to the year. I mean, many people, like, people expected him to compete again with the compete for the Triple Crown or something.
It's a lot to ask.
Yeah, exactly, especially from a second-year player. But I think that he has so much pop in his bat, and he's such a useful player that I think to have him leading off is almost taking away from what he can do and how he can impact your team.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're not asking him to take away his power swing. They're saying, get on base, steal some bases, hit for power, do whatever you can, play your game to be successful. If they were saying, hey, we just need base runners, hit the ball on the ground, then I think that would jeopardize him and cripple him. But they're not doing that.
Well, yeah, so, but I'm not saying
he's not going to drive in as many runs
exactly
in the leadoff spot.
Exactly, and I think that he can drive in well over 100 runs. We saw him last year. He'll hit him into the gaps. He'll hit it over the fence. And if they can get a leadoff hitter, that might take some pressure off Josh Hamilton. It might allow him to move Trouty to third, Pujols to four, Hamilton to five maybe.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Yeah. I don't want to face that lineup whatsoever. Then you have Trumbo at six.
Yeah, that's scary.
But you have to get a true leadoff hitter, because right now you can't afford to take that much speed in Mike Trout off of the top of that lineup if you're not going to replace him with someone that can create as much havoc on the bases.
Right, we'll see if they make any moves later on in the season. That would definitely be something for them to look into. Now let me get to my ballers and fallers. I'm going to start with my faller, one of my favorite players in the league, the center fielder for the Dodgers, Matt Kemp.
Yeah.
Had a phenomenal past couple years and just hasn't started this one the way we wanted him to in L.A. He's 2-for-20. If you don't want to do the math, he's hitting 100 with 2 RBI so far this season.
That's not good.
No, it's not. And I expect him at some point to turn it around, but he's having some of the same problems that Josh Hamilton is. He can't lay off the fastball at his eyes. He can't lay off the slider low and outside in the dirt. And until he becomes a more patient hitter, these are the pitches he's going to get, and he's not going to be as successful as he could. He has the potential to be the best player in baseball, without a doubt in my mind.
Absolutely.
If he has a better feel
for...
He
was for 1 year.
Right. If he has a better feel for the strike zone, a better feel for what he can hit out of the park. If he only swung at pitches, he would hit over the fence, he would hit 320.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So if he fixes that, he's going to be phenomenal again.
Yeah, I mean, he is great out there, and like you said, arguably one of the best players in the National League when he's right. I think him hurting his hamstrings last year really took away from him. We saw him the year before that, he was the best player in baseball, I think.
Right,
and
I agree.
Unfortunately, didn't win the MVP, but he still had a phenomenal year. And he was starting to carry that over into the beginning of last season before he got injured. And
it takes you out of a rhythm. It's
absolutely
tough.
And then you're worried about your hamstrings the whole time, because that's an injury that really doesn't go away from you. It kind of stays with you, especially when you're going full speed hard all the time like these baseball players are. One wrong move and you're on the DL for 15 to 60 days.
Yeah, it definitely lingers, not just in your hamstring, but in your mind.
Yep.
You want to run full speed. You want to give it everything you got, but you're like, I think me going 80% is better than the backup center fielder, and it's going to keep me off the DL. And that's just a mindset that some of these guys have. They don't want to lose paycheck. They don't want to miss time. They want to play. They want to try to win a title, and they want to be on the field most of all, and it's tough. when there's something in your mind. I mean, we see this in the NBA right now. Derrick Rose has been cleared for almost a month now by doctors.
But he's not right mentally.
And he's not right mentally, and he's not playing basketball. And who knows when he's going
to
come back.
Yeah, but I think to that being a testament to Matt Kemp, I think, like you said, he knows that he is the best chance for the Dodgers to win a title, to even make it into the playoffs.
Right.
He has to be on the field. If not, then really, I don't think they have much of a shot. I think that he is really key to that team. Even a Matt Kemp at 80-85% is better than any backup you're going to bring in for him.
Without a doubt, unless he's chasing pitches out of the zone, then we have a problem there.
Yeah, very true. But I think that, like you said, I think he'll shore that up. He's a great hitter.
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of pressing a little bit. He knows that he hasn't started off well.
Guys want to start the season hot, and so they try too hard. They swing at everything because they want to try to hit everything. I mean, they've been seeing spring training fastballs. They're finally getting some real live pitching, and they want to crush the ball, and it takes some time to adjust. And I don't mind as a Dodger fan that he's starting the year slow as long as the numbers are there in the end. And maybe that means he has a better second half than he does a first half, and I'm okay with that going down the stretch.
Yeah, or even like he could have a May where he hits 450 with 12 home runs, and people completely forget about the April. So we'll see. You know, it's only the first couple of games, but yeah, I agree. He needs to do something to turn it around, at least show a sign of improvement.
Right. Now let me give some credit to somebody. How about ex-Diamondback Justin Upton?
He's the man.
As my baller, he has been the man for the Atlanta Braves. I mean, he's hitting .423, 11 for 26 at the plate, 9 runs, 6 home runs, 8 RBI.
Oh my gosh.
That's a month.
That's disgusting.
That's a month's worth of work
and
in a week and
fans,
a half.
Diamondback fans, all you got for that was Martin Prado.
Well, see, that brings up another issue that we've talked about a little bit before, is do you think the Diamondbacks would have been successful this year with Justin Upton?
Okay. So my biggest thing is I'm not sure that Justin Upton would have played this well if he was still here. I think...
However, Atlanta is a much bigger... It's a pitcher's park. Chase Field is a hitter's park.
Not the park. I'm saying his mindset. I really don't think that he wanted to be in Arizona all that much. I think that it was a nice change of scenery. They got rid of his best friend in Chris Young, and I think he kind of felt alone. Kevin Towers just kept signing a bunch of outfielders in the offseason. And what does that tell your star outfielder that you drafted so high that is supposed to be the future of your franchise when you continue to make these offseason moves to bring in more outfielders? I think the writing was on the wall for Justin Upton. I think even if they had kept him, the buzz was around. He wasn't liking it. People weren't necessarily too happy with him. I don't know why. Last year, they thought that he had a bad year. He still scored over 100 runs, playing with a hurt thumb. So, I mean, I think the D-backs fans are going to say they're happy about this, but
the D-backs fans loved him. The front office didn't. I mean, it was tough for fans to see him go. But now you mentioned his buddy Chris Young got dealt, and he was out of the picture. Now he's maybe a little lonely. It's tough to cope with that. He goes and joins his brother in Atlanta, and they're on fire together. I mean, BJ and Justin combined for a tie home run in the bottom of the ninth, and then a walk off to win it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their chemistry obviously is just fine.
Yeah, he is looking like he's having a blast out there, and I'm happy for him. I am a huge Justin Upton fan. I loved him. I was hoping he was going to finish his career with the Diamondbacks. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. That's sports for you, and I'm going to be rooting for him a bunch with the Braves. But the D-backs, they didn't get a terrible deal out of it. Prado isn't a sexy name, but he's definitely a good, solid player that the D-backs needed, I think.
Right. It's a deal that really hinges on the future. We can't tell for a few years if we like it or not.
Yeah.
Because really, we need to wait for players to develop that they got back in the deal. And I don't think the Diamondbacks would have won the division or a wild card spot this year with or without Justin Upton. So if you don't want to pay him hundreds of millions of dollars to lose, you might as well pay guys less to lose and hopefully develop into guys who win and you're still paying less.
That's true.
That was the mindset behind it. It's obviously tough for fans to know that they're not having the highest payroll possible, but they still have a pretty high payroll. They're still got a great pitching staff, and they're still going to try and find success this year in the NL West.
Yeah, absolutely. They're doing their own form of money ball out here, actually. Not going for the expensive players, but trying to buy their runs here and there. And as you said, that pitching staff is nice, especially that bullpen. got a couple lefties out there, and David Hernandez and J.J. Puts to end. It's pretty nice. Although Heath Bell does not know how to throw a baseball. He just his fastball and curveball is fastball down the middle. That's his out pitch.
Well, we'll see if he can figure it out. But that's what makes this team scary, because you win regular season games with your bats. You win in the playoffs with pitching.
Yep.
We saw it with the Giants last year. If this team can get into the playoffs, they've got a pitching staff to win a short series and a long series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so nobody wants to see you with a great pitching staff in the playoffs, but they're gonna have to hit enough in the regular season, and that's gonna be the big question mark.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, anybody can really make it into the playoffs nowadays. And you know, we were talking about it earlier. To me, there's really only two teams in the NL that have proven their worth, and that's the Nationals and the Braves. I think that they are clearly the two best teams in the National League. Braves, phenomenal pitching so far, which has surprised me a lot. And if their pitching is going, we all know that they're going to average about 4 to 5 runs a game. And so that's a scary team. And the Nationals, Bryce Harper looks phenomenal. Yeah. Strasburg looks great. Got a little roughed up, but that's going to happen. He's not always going to strike 20 people out.
Right.
But their team definitely looks strong. And I like the Rafael Soriano as a closer. He did great with the Yankees, and then he came over to the Nationals, and now he's closing games for them, and that really shored up the back end of their bullpen. So I think that those two are definitely the strongest in the NL. And then really, the fight for third is kind of up for grabs. Unfortunately, one of those teams is going to win a wild card, but I mean, the rest of it, I think the rest of the field is pretty wide open. Like, the Diamondbacks could easily swoop in and get the third seed if the rest of the league isn't careful.
Right. Those are by far the two best teams in the National League. We've yet to see. I mean, the Mets are 5-3, which is a better start than I anticipated. We'll see if they can keep it going all year long.
Yeah.
We'll see if Philadelphia can do anything. Obviously, we don't expect Miami to be in contention.
They can't hit the ball to save their lives.
But then you look at the Central, and Cincinnati and St. Louis are going to be competitive
all year. That's going to be a good division to watch.
But we'll see. Like, right now, they're both hovering about 500. Cincinnati at 5-3, St. Louis at 4-4. We'll see if the loser of that.
I bet you the winner
matchup is good enough to beat that third team in the East, or even that third team in the West to see if, or they would have to beat the second team in the West to see if, like, they're better than Arizona or the Dodgers or San Francisco, whoever doesn't win that division.
Are we talking about the Phillies here?
The Phillies, yeah.
If the Phillies get in, they're going to be the last wild card spot.
No, wait, I'm sorry. We assume Atlanta and Washington are in, right?
Yeah, so that means if the Phillies get in, they would have to play that play-in game.
Right. No, what I'm curious, though, is not the Phillies, my mistake, is the loser of the St. Louis-Cincinnati matchup in the Central.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see if one division can get three and maybe with the Phillies or with the Dodgers and D-backs. Because that matchup's going to be tight all year long. We'll see. They don't have the Astros to beat up on anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So who knows?
I think the winner from that division only has about 90 wins. I think that they're going to be beating up on each other all year, and I don't think that anyone's going to really pull away like we saw the Reds did last year.
Right.
They won, I want to say, 100 games. They might not have reached 100, got to like 98. But I think the Reds are going to contend and the Cardinals are going to contend, but I don't think anyone's going to pull away with that division. The Brewers don't look too strong, and the Pirates, you know, maybe they're doing the opposite this year. Maybe what they're doing is they're going to start off a little slow, so then at the end of the year, they can finally make that push for the postseason.
That's possible. The Reds ended up 97-65 winning the division last year. The Cardinals in the wild card, 88-74.
I see the winner of that division having about 88-90 wins. That wouldn't surprise me. I would be very surprised to see someone win over 95 games from that division.
Right. The Reds might fall like 6 games worse than they did last year. And those are the games that they didn't play the Astros.
There you go.
Or Joey Votto's not the best player in the world for a few weeks. Yep. You know what? Anything's possible. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tight race all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the National League is going to be fun to watch. Like, they're... We're going to be seeing the Braves and the Nats fight for the top two, and then it's going to be an open field, and it's going to be a great time when it comes to – especially now they have the two wild card spots. That makes it just so much more fun when it comes out last week, unless you're one of those wild card teams, especially if you're the top wild card team. That's the worst. I had a buddy who was a Braves fan, and I have not heard the end of it, how they should have been in the playoffs, and infield fly rule and blah, blah, blah.
I'm just not a fan of the second wild card team. I understand why they do it. You keep more teams involved. More people are buyers and not sellers.
It's more for the fans, yep. I think it's more so fans stay in the game.
And buy tickets and go to games.
Exactly. So when it comes August, when it comes July, even end of July, August, and into September, the teams that are generally out of it. Like last year, the Cardinals wouldn't have had anything. Anything. 2 weeks left in the season would have had nothing to play for 2 years ago. But now, them, the Brewers, even the Phillies. The Phillies are making a push, and they started so terribly. Like, that's all it takes is finishing a little bit above 500 to win that second wild card spot. And that's exactly what Major League's wanted. It might not be good for the game, but it's great for fans, and it's great for entertainment.
Yeah, it is. I'm just, I guess, putting on an analytical standpoint, not a fan hat, and saying I don't like it.
I understand.
Because I think that there is such a big gap in between the number one and number two wild card spots, and to have a one-game playoff, just it's not right. It's not just for the number one spot.
It wasn't fair to the Braves last year.
That's what I'm saying.
Whatsoever. They would have had that wild card wrapped up, would have been getting ready for their divisional matchup, I believe, against the Nationals.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, or actually, it wouldn't have been the Nationals. They wouldn't have had that rule switch. So it would have been the Reds?
Regardless, the Braves finished six games above the Cardinals.
Yeah.
It should not come down to a one-game playoff when you beat a team by six games.
Yep.
They earned the right to be in the playoffs. And
it got
taken out from under.
I mean,
the home game. You win. So the home game is worth 7 or 6.5 games then.
Yeah, according to Major League Baseball.
It's not right. I don't like it.
The reason why they did it is because of the whole wild card play-in game that happened the year before. They thought that, oh, hey, this happened this year, so why not make it a rule so there's a play-in game every year so that a situation like what happened between the Red Sox and the Rays won't happen again, where they'll be allowed to play against each other. But it's just never going to happen again.
It's such a dumb train of thought. I mean, the reason you do a playoff game is because they're tied. Not because there's a six-game gap in between them. That would be fair. If they're tied, okay, have a play-in game.
Yeah, exactly. Like okay. We saw it from the Tigers and White Sox a few years ago when the Tigers, I think, won like three straight titles. I want to say three straight off of play-in games between the Twins against the Twins and the White Sox respectively for, I want to say, 3 years in a row. And that's great baseball right there, and it wasn't planned at all. And that didn't force a rule change. It's only because it happened in both divisions, and I want to say because the Red Sox were a part of it, and they're such a big fan base, and they have such big connections in the league that there had to have been some murmurs that were like, well, hey, if this happens to us again, we want to be able to have a chance to get into the playoffs.
Right, and I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. I hope the two wild card seeds tie, so that doesn't have an effect.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be perfect.
It'd be perfect.
Ideal situation right there.
Yes, absolutely. But then I don't know how you decide who gets the home field advantage for
Flip
the play.
Flip coin.
Perfect. Fair. I like fair.
Rock, paper, scissors between the starters.
Okay, I don't like that. But I guess that'll do it for this episode of Beyond the Base Paths. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll have a weekly D-back segment like we did today. We'll have our ballers and fallers for you every week, and we'll see what else we can add to the show. If you have any ideas, just let us know. And tweet Cronkite Sports. So thanks for listening. For Gabe Cordoba-Hawthorne, I'm Josh Franz. This has been Beyond the Base Paths.